she's pouring from the sky. Stash some chips up. No fear of missing out. I'd rather dip and flip. What? Now pump it up and double up is what we hit. What? 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 This is it. What? Satoshi's pouring from the sky. Stash some chips up. No fear of missing out. I'd rather dip and flip. What? Now pump it up and double up is what we hit. What? 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 Satoshi's pouring from the sky.
Hello, and so welcome to the 12-year Bitcoin anniversary edition 2021 of the 21ism music block. I had the pleasure, and so this month, to talk to Christy Harper, a simply awesome London DJ and music producer who released an epic track featuring a sample from Eric Latham at I Am The Character recently. So here we go. Check one.
That sounds a lot better. Yeah, it's definitely a much better mic. Just looking out the window, and we've got some white stuff. Fancy that. Some snow. Some snow coming down.
You're near Bristol, aren't you? Or in Bristol?
Yeah, we're in Bristol. So, that's nice. That's really nice. Yeah.
Oh, no, we've just got rain here.
You've just got rain there.
I'm just happy to be here.
Cool. Well, it's great. I mean, and so when I first heard the speech by Eric at that kind of BLM march in the US, it was just phenomenally powerful. And I'm sure, like everyone, it had a huge impact. And then the dust kind of settled on it. And then I heard about your thing that popped up. And I had a look at the video as well. And I just thought the video was just awesome. Really well produced and just very artistic and really captured the energy of it. The music was stuff that I've always liked that kind of style, and it reminded me of kind of my days in Hackney a bit more, and
Hackney rave days.
Yeah, my Hackney rave days, which unfortunately are a bit over at the moment. But
I think they're over for everyone at the moment.
I guess it's for everyone. I know, it's tragic. It'd be great to talk to you a bit more about all that stuff. It'd be nice to know a bit more about your backstory, about your entry into music and your development as a musician, as a DJ, as a producer, and so what you've been doing with it.
Yeah, for sure.
And so how you make it and how you release it and things, and obviously what the implications have been this year, which are pretty mental. And then we could maybe sort of talk about your entry into Bitcoin as well. What predisposed you to it, how that's grown and developed, and then your decision to start to merge things this year. And some sort of hopes and plans for the future and things, really.
It's lots of hopes, isn't it, and less plans.
Yeah, I guess it's a big source of hope though, Bitcoin, isn't it?
Oh my God, it's so funny. My ex-boyfriend and I, we were together for a really long time, and I started getting into Bitcoin, and then he got in very swiftly after. But we still talk, because we're still friends, and literally every other day we're sending each other screenshots of the charts. Getting so excited. And he said, you know what? I think I would be really depressed if I didn't have Bitcoin. And I said, I feel exactly the same. I feel like it's the only thing getting me through, which is crazy.
It seems to be a very common story. It's just an unfuckable source of hope that you can rely upon.
I like that unfuckable source of hope.
Yeah. I don't know. It really, it just seems to be doing its thing, just like we'd all dreamed and hoped and done the research on. And
it never had any doubt in itself, though, because it was like, I'm going to do this anyway. Plus, it's a global pandemic and shit is going down. So
time to shine, baby.
Time to shine. I'm performing.
Yeah, so we're just going to enjoy the fireworks for a bit. I notice on your wall you've got a poster for Chervinia.
Have you been there?
Yeah, I did some kind of snowboarding there a few years back. It was really cool. Have you been there?
No, it's funny because I've done 3 snowboard seasons because I'm massively into snowboarding.
But you have been to a few of the kind of snow bombing events, haven't you? This kind of snowboard festival, music festival thing.
1 year I drove from Horizon Festival in Andorra. Have you been to Andorra snowboarding?
No, I haven't. I'd love to.
Really great. I would massively recommend it. Yeah, it's just great. Like everyone's really cool. Spanish people are great.
Yeah.
And it's tax-free, so the alcohol is very cheap. That's a plus.
Attractive.
But yeah, we drove from there all the way through Italy, broke down in Italy, and then drove to Austria. So that's where most of the festivals that I've played at or snowboarded at is Austria. I did
Austria, Mayrhofen or something, is
it? Mayrhofen, yeah. So snowboarding to Mayrhofen. I think I've been about 8 times or something. I think I'm a bit of a snowbombing addict. So I was like, I'm going to go every single year until I can't walk.
And you perform there?
Yeah, so I used to be a presenter, all music stuff. So that's why I was presenting at these festivals, interviewing loads of DJs. And then my agent at the time, which I'll tell you about in my musical backstory, was like, why don't you DJ? And I said, it's a bit of a different skill set. You know, I can talk, but DJing, you have to learn it as it's a skill. Anyway, I learned, I loved it. And because I had all the contacts from the festivals, snowbombing was like one of the first ones I think I played at, which was cool.
Where's the crowd from there? Is it mostly Brits or?
So many Brits. I'm sad to say, so many Brits. 5,000 just descend on this cute Austrian town and just cause absolute mayhem. It's ridiculous.
That is, yeah, it's a bit rude, isn't it? And so sometimes you get a bit embarrassed for our behaviour abroad.
We're so embarrassing. I'm like, guys, we're not all like this, I promise. The people that, there are nice people around.
That's probably part of the reason why we've now been banned. It's just the perfect excuse.
Oh my God, isn't it crazy that we are on this island and we're just being shut out? There's nobody wants us anymore. No one wants to be our friend. We're on the naughty step.
Great. So you're from the north of England originally, right?
Well, actually, no. I'm from Watford, but my... my mum's Scottish. Yeah, but my dad had a hi-fi shop in Scarborough and then met my mum. My mum's an actress and she was touring and they met in Scarborough. So very random. And she obviously said, I'd quite like to live somewhere a little with a few more opportunities.
And to somewhere else.
Basically, that's what she said.
Yeah.
And then they moved down here. So I think he subconsciously has been a massive part, actually not even subconsciously, but massive part of why I'm so addicted to music, which I'm sure everybody has that sort of family story.
In terms of you were hearing these great hi-fis audiophile kind of soundscape when you were growing up, right? What kind of music were you hearing?
He had the most incredible record collection. Well, I have it now. He was obsessed with the Beatles. I think a lot of people in that time were obsessed with the Beatles. But anything from like Ossi Bisa, loads of African world music to 70s, 80s rock and roll. I basically, when I inherited all of his records when he passed away, I started playing. And people come up to me like, oh my God, this record came out and I remember the moment it came out in 1969 and this is what I was doing, or I proposed to my wife listening to this, and it was this crazy feeling of like I'm playing my dad's records to people and connecting to them through music, and it was just this really nice thing. It's like I'm carrying his energy through the music now, and didn't ever think that would be the connection that I would get from it. So it's definitely such a big part of why I'm so obsessed with DJing now and connecting with people through music and sharing his music, my music. It's everyone's music, isn't it? So
yeah. And so were you kind of playing music before you got into the presenting?
I was the kid that literally made every single person a playlist or a mixtape. Anyone that would hear it, I'd be like, made you a mixtape, made you a playlist. Don't worry, it's not because I fancy, it's just because I really like music.
Going to those Hackney kind of rave days that you discussed, when was that? Would that still be going on if it weren't for lockdown?
To be honest with you, I cannot stop dancing all the time. I love dancing. I love music. Even if I'm not drunk, I will stay up till 7 in the morning just dancing. And that's just been how I've always been. My mum's exactly the same. Less of a night owl, but more just constantly dancing. But actually, growing up in Watford was quite interesting because we had this weird scene of like, horrible clubs, but also really good forest parties and a huge bunch of creatives. And a lot of musicians came out of this part of town, which is interesting because it might just be because there's nothing else to do.
Perhaps, yeah.
It was cool because I, you know, went to my first, I think, underage technically rave. It wasn't really. It was old school garage. And it was, I think it was DJ Luck and MC Neat. And I went to go and see, and that was in Watford. Growing up in Northwest London, it was more, I'd go out in Camden quite a lot. So it was more live shows. And then when I moved to East London, maybe about 10 years ago, it became a lot more, yeah, ravey. Mm.
And so East London was a lot of fun.
Yeah,
I was around sort of Hackney Central, but used to go into Dalston and down to Haggerston quite a lot and things.
Yeah, my old haunts.
So let's talk about some of these places. A lot of them seem to like have closed.
Did you get to go to Brilliant Corners?
I loved it. Yeah, I was there for a couple of years. I was sort of kind of attending it, and great group of people behind the bar. Those two owners were lovely, and just great taste. And
such good taste. It's so amazing that it was the first place I went really that I saw people play a record in its entirety, and just because they want to hear every single element of that song. And it's about appreciating so much about the craft behind it. It's like people will start the song when another one has finished. So you will hear the intro, you'll hear the full song, and you will hear the outro. And then people were standing there clapping when it was a good song. And I thought, this is wicked. This is so great. Yeah. And it was really nice to be in an environment where people were just there to listen to music on an incredible sound system, you know, and obviously
it was fantastic. Yeah.
Oh, and you hear records that you have never heard before very often, and like really amazing rare gems that they've actually just opened a pop-up. Well, it's obviously shut now, but where they sell lots of biodynamic wine and Japanese records basically, because they've got quite a lot of links with friends in Japan, and the record scene.
Kei Suzuki, like, he's great. Really awesome guy. And so Giles Peterson, I guess, probably is in that sort of circle again as well.
Totally, like Worldwide FM. And it's so nice to go into a venue and people have got their eyes closed listening to music, and there's no judgment. You're dancing like a weirdo if you want to, but nobody's watching. And that's actually what I sometimes miss when you go clubbing sometimes now. It's very organized, you know, and there's signs for the toilets and you have to get tokens for your drinks, and everyone's, you know, on Instagram and filming stuff on their phone. And it's just, that just doesn't really happen at Brilliant Corners. And I think those venues are few and far between now.
It would be, and it's really tragic to lose all this, you know, that sort of culture.
It
breaks my heart too, yeah. And so do you see that kind of coming back soon, or?
I go through phases of being really positive. I'm positive most of the time. That's not necessarily what I mean, but it's more like I go from being very excited about the future to not sure if I can see a future of, because it's going to be a new world. It's not going to be the same as it was. And that in a way is good. We're always evolving and we're always changing. But the thing that makes me most sad is when I hear people talk about it, they're like, oh, but you know, shops are fine, and you know, as soon as we get back out into this world and restrictions are down and people are moving again, they'll go to the shops and they'll buy things. And I'm like, yeah, but it's the people that are, it's the huge conglomerates and the chains that are able to survive this. It's most of the time the small shops that you won't notice that have gone. And with music, it's these tiny venues, because they get so it's my ex-boyfriend, he runs Brilliant Corners. So I hear very much on the ground exactly what's happening. And like for them, I get so concerned, as I do with all these small venues, because it's like, how's it going? Oh, you know what? We've made some changes and we're going to do this, and we've got an outside area, or we're building this, or we're building that. And then they finally get on their feet again and things start rolling in, and then they make a little bit of money. And then we're in lockdown again. And I just don't know how people can weather that beyond spring. Mm. It's so tough. And I noticed such an energy change around sort of September, October in the music industry and creative community. I felt that a lot of people went from being, it's okay, I'm excited, you know, we're going to get through this, to, oh my God, we've got a whole winter of what we've just been through.
Yeah.
But with darkness and cold weather and sadness and no, like there is a light at the end of the tunnel, but I just feel like sometimes you can't really see it. It's really, really scary.
Yeah, no, it's pretty, it is pretty dark in that respect. I know that in Hackney, I mean, the turnover for venues for all the small independents was pretty high anyway, because the rents are crazy and the overheads are nuts. So they've really got to, they've really got to kind of nail their thing just to succeed and to, just to survive.
So many venues have shut down already, and it's we're not even through the winter, the hard winter yet. And actually in Peckham as well, I spend a lot of time in South London, and I was down there just before lockdown, and someone was like, God, there's been at least five places shut in the last month, you know, that I used to go to. And I'm a little bit out of London now, so I don't seem to see it as much. But as soon as I go in, it's completely different. It's changed in a matter of months. And yeah, it does really break my heart. And I just hope that people are getting the support they need. There was some arts funding for certain venues. But again, it was only a select number of venues, and it's only people that are very good at doing applications, you know. It's not
And so that's the new name of the game, isn't it? You succeed if you're good at doing application forms,
which is a nightmare,
which sucks balls. My heart really goes out to, you know, the young aspiring artists and the musicians who maybe are not on a contract, and like, that's just a precarious sort of situation with, I'm sure, a lot of despondency and frustration.
So much frustration. Mm. Actually, I spoke to quite a lot of people about this in the electronic music industry, because, you know, we were thinking, what is going to happen? How do you see the landscape, you know, maybe next summer? Is it, who's going to survive this? What artists? Will it be the top tier artists that are getting paid huge fees so they can, you know, weather the storm? Or will it be, you know, I think it's that middle tier of artists that they were just making enough money and creating enough. But now, I mean, it's so difficult to get work and so difficult to support yourself in an industry that's obviously not thriving or even working at all. And then you have another thing, which is in a way quite positive, is all these people, these young artists at home creating and making and having time to develop their craft and learn skills and make music. And I think that's really beautiful. But the people that put 10 years into what they've always wanted to do and have sort of been forgotten about, and I think that's quite difficult. But there are positives in what might come from
It's almost like a kind of mirror of what's happened to wider society in terms of the decimation of the middle classes and the centralization of power in the higher echelons. But the people who are just getting by and maybe paying taxes and have built something, but not a great deal of security, I think the people who have something to lose.
And anyone that will listen to me, everyone knows how obsessed I am with Bitcoin. So I'm like, there is an alternative. You can become self-sovereign. You can protect your wealth, you know, but a lot of people don't want to hear it. However, things are changing.
Yeah. And just going back to you, you said that the people, artists and creatives, have done a lot of kind of productivity this year. And so you've been producing as well, haven't you, your output?
Yes. I go from being really productive to not productive at all. And I think that's totally normal. And I accept that. And you can't be productive all the time. And it is massively based on how happy you are and things around you. And for me, I'm a hugely social person. I mean, some of my introvert friends have been like, I don't know how you're handling this. You're such an extrovert. And I do love my solo time, but it's that energy you get from other people and the energy I get from the crowd, listening to other DJs play, discovering new music, that gives you so much, I don't know, warmth that you then create off the back of it. Mm-hmm. So I go from creating to then needing to like top myself up in a way, just top my energy up and do other things because it's hard. But it's made me fall in love with music all over again because I'm not tired and my ears aren't hurting from DJing five nights a week. And I'm listening, putting on records, and I'm just laying on the floor and listening to music like I used to listen to it. And that's connecting me in another way. So it's just changing. But I have got, I've been working lots of remixes. And yeah, I've made quite a few tracks over the last few weeks, which I'm quite excited about.
You just released one just kind of yesterday, didn't you, that I heard?
My Body, My Future. It was actually called Slut. Yeah, if people can't tell already, I obviously love a good sample where there's some sort of political message and then I can push that message through different mediums. And Samira Rahim is incredible, and I listened to her at the Amber Rose Slut Walk a couple of years ago, and it was actually at a time when I was getting very frustrated with, sadly, men in the electronic music at this time, because you get a lot of judgment as a woman. And I was finding it like, I have to keep proving myself. And people assume the first assumption would be that you don't make your music yourself. Or the first assumption would be like, do you know how to set these DJs up? And that's fine. I'm sure people are just, you know, wanting to help. But I was getting quite frustrated at this point. I heard that interview and I was like, oh my God, I need to sample it. She's so fabulous. But I got so many emails from people saying, will you actually release it? And are you going to put it on streaming platforms? And are you going to distribute it? And I hadn't planned on it, but I thought, I'm just going to do it. And it's had a really nice response.
And so how do you release your music? Where do you release it?
So it always changes. You know, the thing I really love about the electronic music scene is that it works in a different way than more commercial labels and the wider scene. It's like you make some tracks and you can send it to a label that you really love. And then they either like it or they don't. But they'll only release it on maybe a single or a VA or an EP, a short album. And then that's cool. You're not tied into any contracts. You're basically, we like you, we really like what you're putting out, we like these tracks, so we're going to distribute them, press them, do the art and the promo, and you're good. And it's like that really nice deal. It works very well. So I had released on a friend's label, Monologues, a couple of years ago. And it was funny because I was actually in India at the time and I was sat on all these demos and I was like, oh, no one's going to want to release these. I'm just going to make some more. And then I went to, it's kind of a weird story, I went to this Ayurvedic doctor to go get my dosha read. And he said, you're very creative, aren't you? And I said, yes, I am. And he said, you just need to shut the door on these things when you finish them and put them out into the world. Stop sitting on them. And I was like, you're reading my mind, man. You're reading my mind. So at that moment, I went back and I sent an email to my friend who runs this label, Monologues. And he was like, great, I want to sign 4 of them. All thanks to Ayurvedic Dosha Man in Rishikesh with a very questionable haircut. And then off the back of that, just other labels that I really loved. But my last 2 tracks, because it was just, they were just singles that I sort of had made at home and I wanted to push out, I just distributed myself and did it that way.
And so can you describe your influences?
I love acid house. I love the 80s. I love like amazing sort of like gritty Italo synths and bass lines. It is always evolving, but I'm massively influenced by a lot of African music, actually, Ghanaian funk and disco and stuff like that. West African disco is just incredible. And you find yourself, it's got so much energy that you want to recreate that and then use different samples or similar vocals. And so I take those influences, but also super 80s and Italo and then acid house. So 80s, African gems and loads of Italo.
So getting into the Bitcoin kind of rabbit hole story, when did you discover Bitcoin? When was that and how's that developed for you?
I've been interested in Bitcoin for quite a few years. Well, quite a few, only like 5. But I'd never invested in it. Or I feel like before you get into it, it looks very confusing. And I think a lot of that is the thing that stops a lot of people getting into it, which is why I've helped set up a number of people's wallets and exchanges, because I know that it's that bit that's the difficult part for a lot of people. So a while ago, maybe 3 years ago, I have a friend, we agree on so many things, just, you know, like the broken system that we're currently living in, lots of alternative thinking, and a lot of the stuff he talks about, I'm like, I really vibe with that. I totally agree with you. Anyway, he's been buying Bitcoin for many years. And I said, can you please just finally teach me what I need to know? Can you send me some sources? Who are you following? Who do I need to read about? Anyway, he did. And then I became obsessed. And I think that's how it happens with everybody. Because when you are already a bit open to other ways of thinking and maybe not agreeing with the way a lot of things work in our society, then when you see this like sort of ideal or utopia, or especially when I like learned about the cypherpunk movement, it just really resonated with me. And I went, oh, there are people out there that really think the way that I do. And there are other ways that I could protect my wealth and make decisions that aren't governed by, you know, the people that I don't want it to be governed by. And yeah, I just went into the rabbit hole from there and I got really excited. And then I think everyone just doesn't stop. We just don't stop reading. And then you get into the kind of community on Twitter and you're constantly looking at memes and then you're on there every day and you start following the people that you that are going to give you the best sources of information. And I think it just spirals from there.
And so who are your best sources of inspiration at the moment?
Well, do you know what? I actually really like Max Kaiser.
Yeah, he's funny, isn't he?
His energy is just really fabulous. And to be honest, I went through a phase of listening to him and Stacey every day. And I just like how he has no filter. And he's so insanely passionate and bearish about it that you can't really get... you'll always end up being excited. And I like how he just slays it, basically. When I first started getting into it and trying to learn about it, I actually watched a lot of Data Dash. And now it's just the snowball Twitter community of just so many voices that I feel like there's so much information to digest. I couldn't tell you who would be my number one.
Sure. And then, and so moving to the song that sort of kind of sparked our recognition of you, The System Is Fucked. It's a pretty good title. It's fucked. and so is that your assimilation of the system at the moment?
Oh my God. I mean, when I made this track, we weren't as fucked as we are now. And now we're extra fucked.
It's true. We are.
It is fucked. I know. I just feel like what we're in is, and what we have been in for a very long time, is primarily, you know, serving white rich men. And there's a lot, especially around the Black Lives Matter movement. It was, and with Eric speaking, which is obviously what I sampled, it was just the perfect moment, really. And I feel like in the community, we've been talking about it being the perfect storm for a while. And it is weird because sometimes the music comes at the time when you need it the most. And I saw him speaking and I just thought, I really resonate with that. And especially I was going to a lot of the marches in London at the time as well, and there were a lot of people feeling really helpless and not really sure with how to move forward. And I think when you offer, it's not like everybody should adopt Bitcoin, you know, if it's not for someone, it's not for someone. But if you can put that message out there and offer something, a different way of thinking, through a way that, like, for example, a lot of my friends, they might not be going on Twitter and they won't follow people that would have shared his speech, right? And they might not have seen it. But I might have people that follow me because they like the music I produce. And it's kind of like a sneaky inception, because as soon as you put a sample or words in there, but someone might be listening to my tracks because they like, I don't know, a bit of an 80s synth or some sort of breakbeat percussion. But if you have that audio over the top and it just slowly seeps into their psyche, it's a way to get messages to people that wouldn't normally be open to accepting them. And I think that it's not like I'm trying to push it on people, but it's something I'm passionate about and want to move it forward.
It's just a little bit of a nudge.
We just got to nudge people. They'll get there eventually.
Yeah, for sure. No, I loved it. I mean, it was such an incredible event to be able to see the recording of his speech. And obviously we weren't there, but your work is an artistic kind of celebration of it. And it will cause that echo to reverberate for so many other people that also weren't there and also would not have heard it through other channels. So I'm sure it will. I mean, I keep playing that track. It really, it makes the hairs come stand up on the back of my neck. It really does.
That's so nice. Powerful. It's funny. I feel it to be so powerful. And actually since then, a lot of people have asked me, can you just talk to me a bit about Bitcoin? And I think it's interesting because it has had an effect and it's not going to be hundreds of thousands of people, but just starting the conversation and with people that wouldn't have normally talked about it, it's really exciting. And that's a really nice thing for me.
Are you planning to do more Bitcoin collaborations into your work?
It's funny because obviously I'm on Twitter all the time. I don't post that much, but I'm on it all the time. And I just keep seeing things. I've basically got a folder of stuff that I'm like, oh, that would be good to sample. Oh, that would be good to sample. So yeah, I think there was actually, I can't remember what it was, but I was watching Max Kaiser and he said something ridiculous and I was like, I kind of think I need to sample that too. But there is just so much scope for sampling. But I'm also very conscious of pushing too much on people too soon.
I see what you mean, but they need that nudge. And there's a lot of hopelessness out there. There's a lot of kind of nihilism. So providing a message of hope, there's nothing wrong with that.
When you put it that way, that means I'm going to go straight to the studio after this. Oh, I don't have to go anywhere. I'm in my studio. I'm just going to make more Bitcoin tracks.
Yeah, no, you should do it. The response from the Bitcoin kind of community to your work and to these references has been good, I imagine.
It has. It really has. Because actually, like, I think it's a very tight-knit community, isn't it? And feels like everybody sort of knows each other. And it was funny because before I made the track, I was actually, I went to one of the marches and I had a sign that said Bitcoin in Black America.
Cool.
And I got photographed for Vogue with this sign. And it went a bit mental and it kind of, so many people... And I don't think people know that's actually me as well.
And so can you share that with me, by the way? Because I'd very much like to, you know, to put that out as well. That sounds like a hell of a picture.
For sure. It was amazing. This incredible photographer, he was like, this is great. I want to photograph you. I said, yeah, cool. And anyway, so Isaiah loved it and he retweeted it and it kind of, there was a lot of support behind that photo in general. It was around that time that I was making the track. And so the support has been really amazing. It's not gone far and wide, but it's just been a really like amazing bunch of people supporting what we stand for and what the message is and the fact that it's in that musical medium, which is nice.
Yeah, I mean, I think the community is still quite small, but it is growing. It's growing its ranks on a daily basis.
Oh my God,
And the people involved are just... They're so strong. They're so powerful. They're so toxic. They're so kind of convicted. Mm. I think it's the start of a movement, and the voices that we're developing, and the art that we're developing, and the music that we're developing is going to be defining that. So it's a fantastic opportunity, I think, to make that mark. And I hope you continue to gouge a line in the future with it.
Well, I will try because I am hugely passionate about it as well. And I believe it is the way forward. And it's even just seeing, like I said, you know, the amount of people talking to me now that wouldn't have said something before I'd released that track. Because I don't think people would have known so much because on my artistic or artist page or social channels, it's not like I'm regularly talking about Bitcoin because I think people follow me for music. So you have to really... like I say, sort of slowly start talking about it. So yeah, music is actually a very good way of doing it because they can't do anything about it. It's already in the song.
I saw your website. It looks really cool.
I don't know if I've updated it. I hope I have.
It looks very sort of well-produced. Did you do it yourself? Did you get other people to do it?
Well, weirdly, I do build websites, but I actually, at the time, was really, really busy. And I did a photo shoot. A photo shoot with a photographer friend of mine, Max Hetherington, who's insane. He's so great. And he does so much great stuff. Anyway, so I had the cool photos and I had the idea and the color scheme, the color palette and all the content and stuff. Yeah. But I've had a friend design that. Because it does take a lot of your time. And I'm trying to learn to outsource because I think it is key. But I love to do everything myself and I think it's a bit of a curse.
Yeah, perhaps it's best to outsource and be more efficient and to do more of what you do best.
Yeah, and I think that's why it's quite difficult for a lot of artists in this current climate because we're all struggling and trying to make money. And therefore we don't have as much time for our creative practice, but you can't really outsource because no one's really got the money to do it. So you're basically doing 10 times more plus trying to be creative plus trying to earn money via other avenues. And so time seems like it's going very fast at the moment, even though we're in a global pandemic and lockdown.
Completely, yeah. I mean, it is fortunate the way the fact that we're alive at a time in which the technology is also kind of telescoping and able to maybe help with some of the little chores, you know, like from editing to creating to, the shopping.
Everything. I mean, it's crazy. I tried to have a conversation yesterday about, you know, how AI is changing the world and half of us won't have our jobs in however many years, but people didn't seem to really be vibing off the conversation. So
true.
Christy, stop talking about how depressing that's going to be. We're already depressed.
We do get told to shut the fuck up quite a lot, don't we, as Bitcoiners?
Oh, well, do you know what? I'm very glad you said that because I was like, why is everyone telling me to shut up all the time?
I don't know. And so the new way of dealing that, of course, is have fun staying poor, which I always thought was quite, not very nice. And I'm still not quite adjusted to it. But at the same time, I think it is very effective, you know.
It's very effective.
I think people might take offense, but in fact, I did say it to someone when I was drunk a month ago, and they took a lot of offense and it ended quite badly. But if you deliver it in the correct way, which I've not yet mastered, it's effective.
It's all about delivery, isn't it? I feel like it's interesting, isn't it? Because when people aren't so open to a certain topic, there is definitely a way of non-violently communicating with them about how to change, or trying to change their mind. And it's really difficult because when you're so passionate about something and you know that it's such a beautiful thing and it can change the world and it offers, like with Bitcoin, it offers us so much or so many alternatives and an amazing amount of positivity. But people are so close to it that you're like, okay, right, how do I chat to them about this? And if you get annoyed, sometimes I'm like, can you not just see how great it is? But that never works. So instead I'm trying to develop a lot more tact and questioning. If you ask people questions, then they kind of answer it themselves. And by the end, they're like, oh, maybe I am a bit more interested. And they tend to then text you a week later saying, have you got any resources online for me about Bitcoin?
Cool. Yeah, that's great. I think it's a process that we're all having to get a bit better at. You know, it's easy on Bitcoin Twitter to communicate with other Bitcoiners about these things. But when it comes to someone who is slightly skeptical and hasn't really heard the message and sort of done the reading on it, it can be a big struggle to sort of communicate these things in an effective way. So 100%. Using other mediums is a great way to introduce these ideas. And perhaps if
that's
they hear it through more and
that.
More channels, then it'll just click at some point.
Because as long as if it's subtly seeping in, like I said earlier, to the psyche, it just, you see something around a few times and you take notice. You know, if you don't have the opportunity to hear it subliminally or see it occasionally, then you're not even going to think about asking questions. But even today, I actually was texting someone just before this and they said, oh, what are you up to? I said, I'm just about to go and record a podcast. And they asked what it was about. And I said, Bitcoin. And they said, oh my God, I've just bought some. My first Bitcoin purchase. And I was like, what? You as well? This is so exciting.
Awesome. So there you go.
There's a lot of firsts, I think, happening, which is really exciting. And obviously the last few weeks have been nuts.
It's been nuts. I believe they've had big sort of billboards on the London Underground, ads on the buses in London as well.
Very interesting because we're in lockdown, so I haven't seen them. We can't go anywhere.
It's probably slightly cheaper advertising at the moment. But in a sense, you don't really need the people to be there. You just need to take the image and you can distribute the digital image and you get more mileage out of that perhaps now than you do from the in real life installation. This is the crazy world we're in.
Oh, totally. And I mean, we've discussed it so many times in this podcast, but it is about those other mediums that people are more open to receiving from. Yeah, there's so much great art out there as well. It's cool what you're doing. I think it's such an amazing project.
Thank you very much. We're doing our best. We're iterating on it month on month. I think that this next block that we're about to deliver is going to be really awesome. We're really proud of it. There's a great lineup, including yourself. I think it's going to be a bit of a winner. I didn't ask you, by the way, about how you produce your music and so what tools that you use.
Maybe you did, but I just go off on tangents.
No, that's all right. So the tangents make it more interesting, but please do divulge. Yeah.
Well, so before lockdown, this crazy 2020, I rented a studio in Hackney Wick. Obviously, we've talked about Hackney a lot. To be honest with you, I basically jam a lot in the box. So I have a MIDI keyboard. I've got an MPD sampler, MPD 32, because a while ago I saw this artist called Romare. I saw his setup at home and I was like, I need that setup because he's like king of sampling. I love it. He samples loads of old blues. I really like, I have in the studio that I'm in right now, I've got the microphone that I'm using, two HS8s Yamaha monitors, which are just great. And then my sampler, my MIDI keyboard and my laptop just to jam out. And then a lot of the time, you know, I will maybe make 10 tracks in a month if it's a good month, if I'm feeling really productive. And then I'll take four of those that are my favorites. And then I'll go to the studio that I was renting in Hackney. And then I'll play with different synths and the pieces I've put in as MIDI, I will then, you know, get to play with some really great old Juno that I couldn't afford right now. Or I can basically like pop the different sounds in because the rest of the song has been constructed. So, but I am loving my sampler again at the moment. I just keep sampling vocals and speeches and I feel like I've always loved that. So right now it's mainly in the box. I've actually borrowed my friend, he dropped it round before lockdown, his Korg DW6000. So that's nice. He's cool. Like, I know you're obsessed with synths, Christy. I feel like this will be really nice for you to have a nice Christmas time because you can't go to the studio. So I'm really excited. I just got the cable today and I'm going to play with it after this.
I don't know what any of those things are, to be honest, but it still sounds cool.
Oh, it's, I mean, it's a bit of a rabbit hole as well. Like once you start getting into the synth rabbit hole, it's crazy, but it's interesting because when I learned about sound design, when I went back to uni to do music production a while ago, I just learned about synthesis and understanding what sound actually is. And so you can pretty much recreate all of these sounds with a soft synth in your like Ableton or something. So it's kind of cheeky because really, do you know Fortet? So he's this incredible producer and he makes the most insane music and posted a photo, I think a year ago, of his setup at home. And it was literally nothing. It was a laptop and a little MIDI keyboard just for triggering stuff. And people were like, that's amazing. This guy is a top-notch producer, you know, selling records all over the world. And all he is using is his laptop. And I think, like you said earlier, technology is creating so many opportunities, and even for creativity, we're not boxed in, which has its you know, positives and also maybe negatives, but you can be very free with just a laptop and a MIDI keyboard.
So we can expect you into your kind of Bitcoin album in 2020, right?
Well, yeah, maybe I'll time it for the old end of 2021 ridiculous rally where everyone's eyeballs are falling out of their head because they're so excited.
Try and time it for 100k.
I mean, the way it's going, that might be in about 2 months.
It could be in 2 months. It's true.
Yeah, shame I haven't got my Bitcoin album ready yet, but now I'm inspired.
Inspired, good. Well, that's a start. And so where can people kind of find your work and a bit more about you?
I guess, to be honest, I do use Twitter, but my main platform is Instagram.
Okay.
At Christy, KRISTYSCH, and my website, christyharper.com, which I will update because...
It's already looking cool.
Thank you so much. I'll update it. But they're my two main... Because through those platforms, you can see my SoundCloud, my MixCloud, where all my radio shows are, and it's a variety of music because I go from my, you know, slow down-tempo sort of Ghanaian soul to more up-tempo house and disco and acid. So there's a lot of music on there.
Great. Well, I'm going to be subscribing. I'm going to be listening to more. And I really hope that, we get some kind of new ears on your work over the next sort of month or so.
That's so kind of you to have me. Thank you.
It's a total pleasure. And so the final question, who would you like to orange pill if you could? Anyone on your radar?
Orange pill, what do you mean?
As in to convert to Bitcoin to...
Oh, convert. Sorry. Yeah. I am... Who do I want to turn to Bitcoin?
Yeah.
On my radar. Do you know what? My brother. Because it has been an uphill battle for years. I'm not even joking. Years. It has been... And this is me trying to learn my tact in questioning. I'm like... I got him to download an exchange on his phone, and that was it. And then another argument ensued, and he said, I don't really see the point, and it's probably too late, and all of the arguments that people come forth with. And yeah, that is, if I could convert him to Bitcoin, life made. I would be so happy.
Awesome. Yeah. And so sometimes it's just the people who are close to us who we care about most, who we'd like to see the way.
Yeah, because when you care and love, like care about someone so much and love them, you want them to make good choices. Obviously, that's totally subjective, but it's, you want them to benefit and you want them to, you know, hopefully become a Bitcoin millionaire.